Wednesday, the 26th of August, yesterday, I said. The interesting things were sitting underneath the models, and this morning the floor dropped another level. Three of the four pieces I want to walk you through are about silicon and about where a computation physically happens. The fourth is about the people standing, where all of that lands. Pour a cup if you have not already, and let us get into them. First up, OpenAI has published the first measured performance numbers for Jalapeno, the custom inference chip it has been building with Broadcom since the middle of 2024, and these are not the numbers a first-generation part usually produces. The testing ran on InferenceX, a public benchmark suite from SemiAnalysis, across three open models, GPTOSS at 120 billion parameters, DeepSeek R1 at 670 billion, and Kimi K 2.5 at a trillion. Against the NVIDIA systems it was compared with, Jalapeno delivered between 1.5 and 1.9 times more work per watt at peak throughput, and between 1.7 and 3.6 times lower end-to-end latency. At the highly interactive end of the curve, the place where an agent is waiting on a single user's token stream, it was 2 to 4 times faster. On DeepSeek R1, it produced 19,600 mixed tokens per second per kilowatt, against roughly 11,800 for the NVIDIA comparison, with end-to-end latency of 1.65 seconds against nearly 6. What makes those figures unusual is what was switched off to get them. Jalapeno achieved all of it with single token prediction, no speculative decoding, and no separation of prefill and decode across different pools of chips. The NVIDIA configurations it was measured against were running their best multi-token prediction settings. The architecture explains some of the gap. The matrix engine is a weight stationary systolic array, familiar from tensor processing units, but with support for small matrix shapes, so it does not fall off a performance cliff when the dimensions are awkward. Cores and memory are divided into slices, and each core slice gets a low latency local view of its own slice of high bandwidth memory, with synchronization confined to a dedicated collective network. And unlike every other accelerator I am aware of, the cores are out of order with a real level 1 cache, rather than the software managed scratch pad everyone else uses. That removes the barrier and launch latencies a graphics processor has to hide by handing every core more work. The timeline is what should make the merchant silicon vendors uncomfortable. Design work started a little over 2 years ago. Full tape-out landed in November of last year. These results come from the very first stepping, after 3 months of bring-up on real silicon, with a software stack started from nothing. OpenAI says its own models did part of the design work, and that Codex brought three open-weight models that were never in the production plan up to high performance in 2 months. SemiAnalysis, who verified the runs in person, raised the honest caveats. Every number came from OpenAI. The workloads are single turn, 8,000 tokens in and 1,000 out. Not the long context multi-turn suite that stresses routers and prefix caching. And the fair comparison is Rubin rather than Blackwell, since both use fourth generation high bandwidth memory. Even measured against Rubin's July figures though, Jalapeno's single token throughput per megawatt still comes out ahead. Moving on to our second story, which is the one with people in it. Stanford economists, led by Eric Brynjolfsson, have published the August update to a paper called Canaries in the Coal Mine, which tracks the employment effects of artificial intelligence through a large anonymized sample of payroll records from the processor, ADP. The finding from last year has not softened. It has widened. Workers between 22 and 25 years old in the most exposed occupations are now 19% below their peers in less exposed fields. A year ago, that gap measured 13%. And here is what makes the number hard to wave away. Across the whole economy, at all ages, there is almost no difference between the most and least exposed occupations. The effect is concentrated entirely at the entry level. Since 2022, employment for 22 to 25-year-olds in the top 40% of impacted jobs has fallen about 11%, while in the least impacted 60%, it grew by 10%. The researchers measured exposure two ways. One was an existing labor market impact gauge. The other was the Anthropic Economic Index, which records how occupations actually use Claude in daily work, and which separates automative usage, where the model replaces work a person used to do, from augmentative usage, where it makes a person who is still needed more effective. That split maps cleanly onto the employment data. Accountants and auditors, receptionists and information clerks, occupations where the automative pattern dominates, show the sharpest entry-level declines. Chief executives and registered nurses, where the augmentative pattern dominates, show flat or rising employment. The mechanism matters as much as the magnitude. This is not appearing as firings, and it is not appearing as people quitting. It is appearing as lower hiring rates, and it is showing up in headcount rather than in pay. Firms are not letting junior people go. They are not bringing them in. The authors also tested whether the pattern tracks what they call codified knowledge, meaning the formal, documented, teachable material you can get out of a textbook, as against tacit knowledge, which comes from practice and mentorship and repeated exposure to real situations. Using required education level as a proxy, occupations weighted toward codified knowledge show slower entry-level growth, while occupations weighted toward tacit knowledge show faster growth for mid-career and senior workers. Higher education still buffers the effect. Where most of the workforce holds degrees, the difference between exposed and unexposed work is muted. Brynjolfsson's own summary is that the overall employment level can hold steady while the on-ramp into a career quietly closes, and that is considerably harder to see in aggregate statistics than a straightforward shortfall in jobs would be. Third up, Apple introduced two chips yesterday, and both of them are pointed at running models locally. M6 is Apple's first 2-nanometer part. 12 central processing cores, split into 2 super cores, 4 performance cores, and 6 efficiency cores. A 12-core graphics processor with a neural accelerator in every core, which Apple puts at nearly 30% more compute for AI work than M5, and a new dual 16-core neural engine, two engines that the system frameworks will schedule at the same time, roughly doubling peak compute over the previous generation. Memory tops out at 32 gigabytes at 170 gigabytes per second. M5 Ultra is the one to pay attention to if you run large models on hardware you own. It is the first quad-die system on a chip Apple has built, made by using the UltraFusion interconnect to join 2 dual-die M5 Max chips. With more than 4.4 terabytes per second running between the dies and 6 times the connection density of the previous version, so all 4 dies present themselves as a single processor. That gets you up to 36 central processing cores, an 80-core graphics processor with neural accelerators throughout, and the figure that actually amounts up to 512 gigabytes of unified memory at 1.2 terabytes per second. That is 50% more bandwidth than M3 Ultra. Apple's framing of it is unusually direct. Hold huge datasets entirely in local memory. Raise tokens per second. Run models with hundreds of billions of parameters entirely on device. The comparison figures are Apple's own, measured against pre-production hardware on selected benchmarks, and they are all relative rather than absolute, so I would not build a cross-vendor argument on them. What is checkable is the memory configuration, and for local inference that is the whole story. 512 gigabytes at 1.2 terabytes per second puts a desktop in roughly the same bandwidth neighborhood as some data center accelerators for weight-bound decode work, at a small fraction of the power, in a box that sits on a table. And for our fourth and final story today, Perplexity has shipped Portable Computer, a version of its agent that runs entirely on a local machine, built with NVIDIA for the DGX Spark. Everything runs on the device: the orchestrator, the planner, the tool router, the scheduler, the durable task queue, and the local search index. The model underneath is either Qwen 3.8 at 27 billion parameters, or PPLX 27B which is Perplexity's post-trained version of that model. Work done locally costs nothing per token. When a task genuinely needs the outside world, the local orchestrator can escalate to web search, to connectors, or to one of more than 15 frontier models in the cloud. And every one of those escalations waits on the user's permission. The research post, published alongside it, is the more interesting document, because its argument is that a local agent is a harness problem, at least, as much as a model problem. Quen 3.8 advertises a context window of 260,000 tokens, and Perplexity found empirically that it begins to struggle past 100,000. So, they kept the core harness deliberately thin. A minimal system prompt, a small set of core tools, and everything else modularized into skills that load and unload as the trajectory runs. Connectors that would normally arrive as model context protocol servers, whose tool definitions eat a large share of the context window, were rewritten as compact command line tools instead. The measurements isolate what the harness alone contributes. Holding the model fixed, their harness reaches 66.7% on browse comp against 50.2% for Pi and 43.9% for Hermes, while using 70% fewer tokens than Pi. On a 100-task document understanding benchmark, it scores 65.1% against 34.6% and 13.9%. On their own 53-task knowledge work benchmark, the harness gets 82.6% with the base model, and post-training the model inside the harness lifts that to 85.4%. The result I keep coming back to, though, is the escalation economics on terminal bench 2.1. The local model on its own scores 59.6%, letting it call out to a Claude Opus 5 advisor when it gets stuck, raises that to 73 at roughly 41 cents a run. Claude Opus 5 doing the whole task alone reaches 82.4 at 65 cents. So escalation recovers about 3/5 of the gap to the frontier for about 2/3 of the frontier's price. And before any of that context leaves the machine, the harness runs a classifier over it for personal information and shows the user exactly what would go. The thread running through this morning is the price of a token and the three different places people are attacking it. OpenAI is attacking it in the silicon by building a chip that stops moving data around. Apple is attacking it on the desk by putting 0.5 terabyte of fast memory somewhere you own outright. Perplexity is attacking it in the harness by deciding that most of the work never needs to leave the machine at all. All three of those make intelligence cheaper, and the Stanford paper is the ledger on the other side of that, recording what happens at the bottom of the labor market as the price comes down, not a collapse, but a door closing quietly for the people who have not walked through it yet. There are 124 items in the full digest if you want the rest of the haul. I will be back tomorrow.